Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 26, 2016. South Sudan's government spokesman says the newly released UN Panel of Experts report on human rights abuses in South Sudan is biased.
It is not strange for anybody to recommend like that because their target and their main objective is the regime change and they have not changed it. So whatever is done must be done geared towards that direction.
And the ruling SPLM party is calling on the international community to support President Kiir's 28 states.
What is left to us now is to go and work for peace, reconcile our people. Peace is already in Juba. We should not waste time and talk about the 28 states again. We should start talking about the creating of new counties and payams.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations has released the final report of a panel of experts on South Sudan, which calls for a comprehensive arms embargo on the country. The report also calls for sanctioning high-level decision-makers in South Sudan's leadership, including President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar, saying the two leaders are responsible for human rights abuses. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
The 51-page report, written late last year and authored by five experts appointed by a UN resolution in March, says President Kiir and a narrow circle of senior officials in the military and national security are waging an aggressive war that involves the targeting of civilians and extensive destruction of communities. It also accuses the leaders of both sides, including armed opposition leader Riek Machar, of continuing to buy arms and carry on the war in order to further their own personal political ambitions at the expense of peace. The report says, as of mid-December 2015, the peace deal failed to result in a meaningful reduction of violence as both sides continue to violate the permanent ceasefire. The report calls for an arms embargo in South Sudan and the sanctioning of high-level individuals in both government and opposition, which would likely include the president and Machar. The United Nations says a confidential list of names will be released by the authors at a later time. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwey says the government is still reading the report and has no official response as yet.
We have just received the report and we will respond to it. We are required to respond to it and we will respond to it. However, the report was received late. It was written 10 days ago, but we received it today.
Makwey says he was not surprised by the UN experts' recommendations to sanction Mr. Kiir. He says the government will continue to be targeted by the United Nations.
It is not strange for anybody to recommend like that because their target and their main objective is the regime change and they have not changed it. So whatever is done must be done geared towards that direction.
Makwey says the report reveals a conspiracy against the government of South Sudan.
If they are talking of sanctioning, indicting the president, indicting Riek Machar and so forth, then definitely this is a very clear plan for a regime change. So we are quite aware about that and we'll see how far will it succeed.
The authors of the report say they have strong evidence that both sides committed human rights abuses, including sexual violence, and used children as soldiers. The United Nations, the United States, and other Western partners have already issued sanctions against five military commanders on both sides of the conflict, seen as obstructing the peace agreement. Three of the five UN-sanctioned individuals are affiliated with Mr. Machar's opposition. The other two are on the side of the government. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The ruling SPLM party officials say, despite the stalemate over the newly created 28 states, they are optimistic the transitional government of national unity will be formed soon. SPLM spokesman Bol Makweng says he believes the parties to the peace agreement will reach a consensus on South Sudan's number of states. Makweng is calling on the international community to support the establishment of the new states created unilaterally by President Kiir. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Makwengi told reporters in Juba today that government officials have been receiving messages of support for President Kiir's appointment of the 28 governors for the new states. He says it would not be proper to revoke the decision, which he insists was a popular demand of South Sudanese across the country, and is completely legal.
It should be the people of South Sudan to discuss it. It has nothing to do with an outsider to say this is bad or that's good. It is their choice. The two houses, Parliament and the Council of States, are all sons and daughters of South Sudan, and they are the people who have decided on this. So you don't really need to work against it.
The SPLM in opposition calls the 28 states a violation of the signed peace deal, and the country should stick to the original 10 states. Makwengi says it was the SPLM in opposition that actually wanted South Sudan states to be increased to 21. The armed opposition says those proposed 21 were based on the colonial administration and not on the president's jurisdictions. Makwengi says South Sudanese have the right to live in any part of the country, irrespective of geographical boundaries. He says borders are there for administrative purposes only.
If you take the well-developed countries like United States or America, which is a federal system, you move from state to state. You are not restricted to one state. The same thing, South Sudanese must settle anywhere.
He says people have suffered enough from the 2 years of fighting. He says now that there is relative peace in the country, officials from both sides should focus on things like nation building, but indicated the government is willing to compromise.
We will still continue, we may even reach 100 if the people want it, because we want to do what people of South Sudan want. We may come back to even 5. We may go back to 100 if that's what the people of South Sudan want.
Speaking at the same gathering, Santo Malik and I, the SPLM's Deputy Secretary for External Relations, agrees.
What is left to us now is to go and work for peace, reconcile our people. Peace is already in Juba. We should not waste time and talk about the 28th state again. We should start talking about the creating of new counties and payams.
For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
From Juba, we go to Harare, where authorities in Zimbabwe are holding 4 men, including 2 army officials and an opposition leader, on charges they plotted to bomb a dairy farm owned by President Robert Mugabe. Sebastian Mwofu reports from Harare for VOA.
On Tuesday, police refused to comment on the 4, saying they are facing charges of court possession of weaponry for sabotage and money laundering for terrorism purposes, unquote. According to court records, when the 4 men aged between 29 and 37 years old were arrested, petrol bombs and alcohol, among other things, were found Friday at Mugabe's farm about 30 kilometers north of Harare. Police said the suspects confessed to planning to bomb the president's dairy farm. Takura Jangaja is an independent political commentator in Zimbabwe.
In terms of the general political narrative in Zimbabwe, usually there are such cases that emerge every now and then, and a lot of trials that emerge around allegations of treason as well as undermining the authority of government. What might be surprising is its origins as well as the areas in which it is alleged to have occurred, close to the first family's residence or business properties.
That was an apparent reference to the fact that in Zimbabwe, all first families' residences, businesses and properties have 24-hour security. There was no word on why the men wanted to attack the president's farm. Mugabe supporters seized hundreds of farms from white owners in the early 2000s under what the government called a land reform program to address colonial-era imbalances. The 4 suspects, who allegedly held several meetings to raise money and plan the bomb attempt, are scheduled to appear in court on February 8. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
We now move to Central Africa, where economic activities have been paralyzed in Chad and northern Cameroon following frequent Boko Haram attacks on trucks transporting goods from Nigeria's Borno State to the 2 Central African nations. During the latest attack, suspected Boko Haram members diverted trucks transporting goods to Chad through Cameroon to unknown destination. This marks a change in a strategy after the terrorist groups started targeting mosques in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the Chadian capital, Djamena.
Nafisatu Aja, sales agent at Arab Supplies, one of the most popular shops in Djamena, says she still waits to be paid last month's salary as the shop has not received supplies from Nigeria's Borno State for several months. She has not been paid because business is slow due to regular attacks on the shop's supply trucks. 45-year-old truck driver Tokba Haman says he no longer travels to Nigeria for supplies because the Boko Haram terrorist group targets trucks and kills drivers.
On voit toujours il y a des manifestations dans les villages voisins.
He says, as the terrorists continue to control Nigerian villages, seizing goods and killing traders, especially around Borno State, business activity will continue to decline in Chad, even with the heavy presence of the military along roads and markets. Chad's customs official, Abdul Said, says three business establishments lost their trucks last Saturday to Boko Haram insurgents in the Nigerian town of Gamburu, which is separated from the Cameroonian town of Fotokol by a 500-meter-long bridge.
Beaucoup de véhicules ont été attaqués par Boko Haram.
He says many vehicles have been attacked and seized by Boko Haram in the past 2 weeks. He says in the most recent attack, the insurgents drove three trucks loaded with goods destined for northern Cameroon and the Chadian capital N'Djamena to an unknown destination. N'Djamena lies less than 50 kilometers from Nigeria's northeastern Borno State, the stronghold of the radical Islamist movement. Chad and northern Cameroon have supply routes originating from Maiduguri in northeastern Nigeria, which is the center of Borno State. The goods are brought in through Gambaru and then Fotokol on the Cameroonian side to Kuseri and N'Djamena in Chad. Lawmaker Abba Kabir of Cameroon's National Assembly says economic activity stagnates in northern Cameroon and Chad because the insurgents are still in control of supply routes from Nigeria. He says if the border road linking Fotokol in Cameroon and Gambaru in Nigeria continues to be controlled by Boko Haram, economic activity will continue to be paralyzed in Chad, northern Cameroon, and parts of northeastern Nigeria. He says their plea is for the military to liberate the road from Boko Haram attacks. Basic goods and manufactured items like portable phones, farming tools, and spare parts for vehicles are imported to Chad along these routes. After troops from Cameroon and Nigeria launched raids on Boko Haram strongholds and drastically reduced their firepower, the insurgents resorted to suicide bombings on mosques and hit-and-run attacks on trucks transporting goods. Landlocked Chad and northern Cameroon also rely on maritime trade from the Cameroonian port of Douala on the Atlantic coast. But supply trucks are also regularly attacked in northern Cameroon by the insurgents. Chad today increasingly relies on its northern neighbor Sudan for supplies, but instability in Sudan's western border and its spillover to Chad is destabilizing both countries. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, N'Djamena.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at a specialized training in WOW to keep girls away from rapists. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
How do you best avoid relationship problems?
When problems don't begin from me, I always keep silent. I avoid the tit for tat method, whereby if you are provoked, you respond reciprocally.
The best way to avoid problems in relationship is to avoid relationship. So if you want to avoid something, you definitely don't go for it.
You'll have to, you know, always be close to each other, you know, have that time to talk to each other better.
By not allowing lies into the relationship, once lies start, more lies get built up, and when the truth is found out, it is actually more painful.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about malnutrition in Malawi. The United Nations Children's Emergency Fund is carrying out a massive screening exercise for malnutrition in children under the age of 5 in 25 of the country's 28 districts. The exercise is in response to a recent vulnerability assessment report which revealed 2.8 million people in Malawi are facing food shortages. Lamek Masina visited one of the screening centers in Zomba district in southeast Malawi and reports for VOA.
It's 8 o'clock in the morning. The Chamber Screening Center in Malawi's old capital, Zomba, is jam-packed with mothers who have access to malnutrition treatment and want their babies screened. Eliza Kadeya, a resident of Chiwanganya village, had her 3-year-old child diagnosed as malnourished. She told VOA she's not surprised. She says she doesn't have food at home and it is becoming difficult even to find piecework to earn money for buying some food. And she says, for example, most of the babies that are crying here is because of hunger. Malawi is currently facing the worst food shortage in a decade, largely because of flooding and drought that hit the country last year. Recent reports from communities and villages indicate an increasing food shortage and hunger problem. The government has been implementing its malnutrition screening and treatment program since 2002 in more than 90% of the country's districts. But statistics show that 50% of children are being seen and treated largely because of lack of medical supplies in public health facilities. UNICEF says its screening exercise, supported by Britain's Department for International Development, seeks to ensure that almost all malnourished children across the country are being taken care of. In Zomba alone, UNICEF seeks to screen about 6,000 children through its Community Management of Acute Malnutrition program. Gilbert Daichi is UNICEF's nutrition specialist.
We can take care of these children through supplementary feeding program. That is a program meant for children with moderate acute malnutrition. Or we can also take care of them through the outpatient therapeutic program where we give them therapeutic feeds. The other aspect is when we get children with severe acute malnutrition, we still refer them for care at the NRD Nutrition Rehabilitation.
Medics say if left unattended, malnutrition can be retrogressive to development. Maggie Joaula is the nutrition specialist in Malawi's Ministry of Health.
When the children are malnourished, it means the caretakers will be busy taking care of them, going to the health facilities to seek like help. They cannot leave that child maybe to go to school when the child is sick, cannot even understand at school. And also the parents cannot even have time to go out in the fields and maybe do business because someone is sick in the household.
Authorities say malnutrition cases can drastically decrease in Malawi if farmers are encouraged to switch from dependency on rain-fed agriculture to irrigation farming, a move they say would let them have food throughout the year. However, national nutrition figures have in the past few years stabilized at 60%, except in flood-hit districts of Chikwawa, Palombe, and Nsanje. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Zomba, Malawi.
From Malawi, we go back to South Sudan, where a non-profit organization has organized a summer camp for girls from WAU to encourage them to stay in school and resist early marriages. The four-day camp educates 13 and 19-year-old girls about how to overcome setbacks that hold them back from achieving their goals. Michael Atit has more for VOA from WAU.
More than 100 girls participated in the summer camp at Auxilium Primary School. Organizer Sister Maria Antonetta says most parents do not spend enough time teaching their daughters life skills.
The parents are forcing them to get married. The parents are forcing them to do this and to do that. So in that case, we become losers, but we have not given up. We continue to work because out of the many, those who come to us, at least we believe that half of them will keep those values and they will learn for life.
Girls at the camp talk about their physical growth and risks involved as they became young women. 16-year-old Madalena Alphonse, who attends the camp, says most of her colleagues left the school due to pregnancy. Speaking in Arabic, she says she is determined to stay in school until she reaches college.
I learned a lot of things, like how I can protect myself from boys who are on the street and focus on my education. Many girls are dropping out of the schools because many times they are deceived by boys and they don't think wisely about their education.
Sister Viola Arcangelo says many girls at the camp do not get proper guidance about making good choice at home.
The generation of today is different, and they need parents to be close to them, or else they get out discovering things on their own. So many times in their early age, they fall into things that are not of their age. Parents must also be close to them. Therefore, these girls are here to learn how to protect themselves.
35-year-old Manfred Camilo Ufo, a father of two daughters, says South Sudanese parents have forgotten the way of their culture due in large part of the current economic crisis.
Poverty is one of the issues that contribute for the girls to be dropped out from the school. And on the other extent, even also, for the children to be controlled in the house, it needs parents really to grab our culture as before, that they should have to sit with their girls and try to reflect them on the current situation based on how the life should be.
Camilo says he thinks outside cultures are negatively influencing the lifestyles of South Sudanese children. He did not specify which cultures he is referring to. The camp started on Thursday and ended on Sunday. The sisters say they plan to hold more camps for girls in the near future. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in WAU.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The United Nations has released the final report of a panel of experts on South Sudan, which calls for a comprehensive arms embargo on the country. The report also calls for sanctioning high-level decision-makers in South Sudan's leadership, including President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar, saying the two leaders are responsible for human rights abuses. The 51-page report, written late last year by five experts appointed by the UN, says President Kiir and a small circle of top officials in the military and national security are waging an aggressive war that involves the targeting of civilians and extensive destruction of communities. It also accuses the leaders of both sides, including armed opposition leader Riek Machar, of continuing to buy arms and carry on the war in order to further their own personal political ambitions at the expense of peace. Government spokesman Michael McQuay says the government is still reading the report and has no official response as yet. Ruling SPLM party officials say, despite the stalemate over the newly created 28 states, they are optimistic that the transitional government of national unity will be formed soon. SPLM spokesperson Bo McQuang says he believes the parties to the peace deal will reach a consensus on South Sudan's number of states. Quang is calling on the international community to support the establishment of the new states created by President Kiir. Quang says government officials have been receiving messages of support for the president's appointment of the 28 governors for the new states. He says it would not be proper to revoke the decision, which he insists was a popular demand of South Sudanese across the country and is completely legal. The SPLM in opposition calls the 28 states a violation of the signed peace deal and says the country should remain as the original 10 states. McQuang says it was the SPLM in opposition that actually wanted South Sudan states to be increased to 21. The armed opposition says those proposed 21 states were based on the colonial administration and not on the president's jurisdictions. And finally, a nonprofit organization has organized a summer camp for girls from Wau State's Wau County, which encourages girls to stay in school and resist early marriages. The four-day camp educates 13 through 19-year-old girls about how to overcome setbacks that hold them back from achieving their goals. More than 100 girls participated in the summer camp at Auxilium Primary School. Organizer Sister Maria Antonita says most parents do not spend enough time teaching their daughters life skills. She says many parents force their daughters to marry at an early age. Girls at the camp have talked about their physical growth and the risks involved as they become young women. 16-year-old Madalena Alphonse, who attended the camp, says most of her colleagues left school due to pregnancy. She says she is determined to stay in school until she reaches college. Madalena says she has learned how to protect herself from boys on the streets, and she says many girls drop out of school because they have become pregnant. Sister Viola Arcangelo says many girls at the camp do not get proper guidance about making good choices at home. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Potential by Radio and Whistle.
Hey, yo. This is General Oz alongside Radio and Whistle. And this is going out to all the potential ladies in the world.
You've been listening to Radio and Whistle with that song, Potential. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Potential.